This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, this is not Waleed Ali, but this is The Mindfield, a show that tries to navigate the ethical dilemmas of modern life. I'm Kay Queck, a lecturer in global studies at RMIT University, and my colleague in the Centre for People, Organisations and Work, also at RMIT, is Megan Tyler, my co-host for this special edition of The Mindfield. Megs, it's great to be here with you today.
Isn't this wonderful?
This is going to be good fun.
I think I was so glad that we got to do this, really, because Sunday's coming up, it's International Women's Day, and Radio National is placing all of its programs in the hands of women, as well they should, I'm sure you would agree.
Certainly.
And you know, it's not like we don't appreciate that gesture, but at the same time, it's really not clear to me, and I think you probably feel the same way, that celebrating is really the way we should be thinking of International Women's Day at all.
Indeed.
I think it's probably much more morally complicated than that. I know a lot of supporters think that it's just good to be out there saying, yay, women, but maybe that's not really how we should be thinking about International Women's Day, and I think that's really the central question we're going to be tackling today.
Well, that's it, but I think we probably need to spend a little bit of time thinking about the backgrounds to this issue and giving some context to this issue, because at the same time, there would be people out there thinking, unless you're a men's rights activist, why would you be doing anything other than celebrating the gloriousness of International Women's Day? And much less, why would two feminist academics be raising critical questions about the celebrations that do go on, and in particular two feminist academics that have a more than healthy obsession with scones and cupcakes, the traditional IWD fare.
Well, indeed. I mean, you know, wouldn't want to put anyone off having a cupcake. But at the same time, it is interesting the way that we've seen, I think, a changing narrative around International Women's Day and a real separation perhaps from the history of International Women's Day, which was, of course, originally International Working Women's Day. It came out of the socialist women's movement primarily, you know, around the turn of the 20th century. And, you know, it was much more in memory of working women was supposed to be the central idea of International Working Women's Day. And it was about workers' rights and understanding women's rights within a framework of workers' rights, which I think we've almost entirely lost.
Yes, I mean, absolutely. When we think about a typical International Women's Day event,
always a breakfast or a brunch, right?
It's always a breakfast. They do seem to be quite highly feminised. And in my experience, a typical event would be we go along to hear a woman speaker or maybe a panel of women speakers, often high flyers in their industry, very successful, and they talk to us about the ways in which they have encountered their success. But perhaps one of the things that we're not talking about are some of the structural barriers that exist around that. It becomes quite an individualised narrative that we are invited to engage with, and certainly not the history of International Working Women's Day, which was quite different to what we see today.
Yeah, the individualisation is kind of key to this, and a loss of maybe a focus on women's work altogether. Like you say, it's been kind of a sense of individual achievement maybe within the corporate sphere in particular. And not really thinking about low-paid women, women on, you know, maybe borderline poverty wages,
those precarious kind of work.
Precarious work, exactly, casualisation, things that arguably should be at the forefront of International Women's Day, we really don't see. You could say it fits in a way with the devaluation of women's work more generally, is that actually there's all this unseen women's work that we don't really talk about on International Women's Day. And it reminded me, you know, obviously the socialist movement and the embedding of International Working Women's Day in the Soviet Union, there's some great posters you can find from March 8, which was when it was celebrated and has been now, you know, for more than a century. And there's this great image that we used to actually have up in my kitchen at home as a kid. You can tell what my childhood was like. The translation is something like, March 8th is the day for the liberation of kitchen slavery. So it was about moving women out of the home, which was seen as the site of oppression, into the working world, which was supposed to be better.
Right.
But then, of course, we do see women still being terribly oppressed and underpaid in the working world as well. That hasn't exactly come to fruition.
No, and it also raises the question of which women are being celebrated, if we're going to keep using that term, on International Women's Day. Because as you said, it's generally not women in low-paying, precarious employment that are the focus of IWD, as I think we're going to have to call it if we're going to cover half of what we'd like to today.
Indeed.
it's also not about, you know, the labour that women perform that's unpaid, undervalued, exploited in the home. It's not the work of mothers. It's not the work of carers of the elderly, volunteers, which it's a highly feminised industry as well. It makes me think about the work of women like Marilyn Waring, who, you know, in her book, If Women Counted, talked about the very significant economic value that women's unpaid labour has to national economies, but it's just not recognised as labour.
You know, there's the associated question of how forced we are to try and value women through a capitalist system then. This kind of undervaluing of women's work, you know, Marilyn's work is incredible, and she's just recently made a dame in New Zealand, I noticed. Again, you know, celebrating the achievements of individual women. But that if we force fit things like child rearing and child bearing into a very capitalist notion of paid work, are we really missing how enormous that labour actually is? You know, if we turn it into work, if we try and fit it into a model of paid employment, we're still using a very patriarchal capitalist model of trying to understand what women do. And then it's definitely a tightrope you're walking between trying to revisit the roots of International Working Women's Day and then to perhaps how it's morphed since it became a UN-recognised day in the mid-70s. That it just kind of became about women generally.
Yes.
Hopefully still with a women's rights focus. And then I think maybe that's even fading as well. But, you know, we're not seeing this maybe as a fight for women's rights anymore so much as a pat women on the back. And that, you know, you're being a bit of a feminist killjoy maybe by having to raise that this is maybe a good day to be raising the issues we need to face in terms of women's oppression and in its variety of forms.
Well, in keeping with that theme of us being feminist killjoys, I wanted to pick up on one of the things you were saying there about International Women's Day becoming about women generally and in very general terms. Because one of the things that I find most, I suppose, almost morally troubling about the way in which IWD is marketed, again, a signal of what it's become, is the way in which it's trying to appeal to everyone and everything without saying all that much. And I think a key example of this is if you Google International Women's Day, you'll be taken to a website which looks like the International Women's Day website. I think it's IWD.org or something like that, where there are these catchphrases such as the theme for this International Women's Day, we're told, is each for equal.
Which means what?
Exactly. I'm not entirely sure what that means. There's a concept of collective individualism, and that's apparently that's the way forward for gender equality. And there's this wonderful phrase which I just had to write down and will quote: equality is not a women's issue, it's a business issue, which just goes to show how far away we've come from the origins of this particular event and what it was about.
I mean, why even mention women on IWD anymore?
Precisely.
It's a business issue.
Exactly. It's quite astounding the way in which the day has being co-opted for marketing purposes or for brand activism without really saying very much at all.
I think there has been this increasing interest in it, which on one level I don't want to, you know, really deride. I'm glad that people are more interested in women's issues and IWD, but are they entering into it through this actual total de-radicalisation of it where we can't even talk about women, we should talk about business? So I think we are seeing businesses proclaim more interest in this and doing their obligatory breakfasts or cupcakes or whatever it is that actually really infantilises women and devalues the day. But they are then finding out, all right, what do I do? And they find this site, which I think is very interesting. So the UN women's site now isn't the top response.
No.
You see a site run by Aurora Gender Capital Management, which seems to be mostly a branding and marketing firm, who have worked for years to make sure that their site is sort of first in the list. And it does intentionally, they have their own theme, which is never as interesting or meaningful as the UN women theme. And it's sort of interesting the way that this has happened so seamlessly. I mean, I've been having these arguments with people, even in the higher education sector, universities who are using the wrong theme, who are going to this kind of website and using the corporate branding.
Yes.
And it becomes difficult. You feel somehow, even though this is your area of expertise, as it is with me, but we're somehow become marginalised on a day in which, you know, you think, well, maybe we should be the ones telling you which is the theme to use, not a branding opportunity on Google.
Well, this seems like a great spot to introduce our guest.
This is The Minefield. You can listen to the show on RN, as you might be doing right now, or you can catch the show anytime on the ABC Listen app or by subscribing to the podcast. And in case you've just tuned in, I'm Megan Tyler and I'm a senior lecturer in the Centre for People, Organisation and Work at RMIT.
And I'm Kay Queck, a lecturer in Global Studies also at RMIT. And we are your hosts for this special International Women's Day episode of The Minefield.
And we are really thrilled to be joined by Celeste Little, our guest for today, an Arunta woman, an opinion writer, a trade unionist and a public speaker. Celeste started her blog, Rantings of an Aboriginal Feminist. I can't believe it was all the way back in 2012. And she's since written extensively on feminist issues, including the increasing trend towards IWD being used as a branding opportunity for corporations. So thanks so much for joining us, Celeste.
Thank you for having me. I can't believe it was 2012 either, but here we are.
I think I've got this growing suspicion that IWD has just become sort of a celebration of neoliberalism in a way, and as a way actually of reinforcing the status quo, telling us everything's fine as it is, and that this rebranding opportunity in some ways can be seen as similar to what we saw with the move from the International Day for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, another United Nations recognised day, becoming rebranded as Harmony Day. And so I sort of started wondering, you know, should we really be commiserating the status of women on IWD, or is there room for celebration too? And that's something I wanted to pose to you, Celeste.
Oh, well, there's so many aspects to this that I want to draw out. And you mentioned Harmony Day, and Harmony Day, as an Aboriginal writer, activist, so on and so forth, sticks in my craw particularly because you know, it was the International Day for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. You know, the parallel here is a similar day, which was the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, that was co-opted by things like White Ribbon Day. Yep. And the watering down of these messages about ending oppression, ending violence, ending discrimination, watering them down into corporatisation. I mean, Harmony Day itself came about because Howard was looking to water down the message of eliminating racial discrimination.
Which is quite clear, right? Eliminating racial discrimination, it says what it does on the tin.
Well, you'd think so, but yeah, he had an issue with that at a time that he was trying to sell the idea of practical reconciliation, which was, of course, you know, glossing over how to achieve any sort of semblance of equity and equality in Australia for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. Yeah. So I've been watching IWD and how the message is, you know, particularly coming from a radical base, which is International Working Women's Day, and off the back of women workers, you know, actually taking action to protest their conditions in factories, and then it being adopted by socialist regimes and used as a day to mark women workers and their place within the workplace and how it was good for the ongoing revolution or struggle or whatever else. You know, to now where you mentioned the corporate website, I've seen all sorts of organisations from councils to unions to whatever else get wrapped up in these hashtag sort of messages, which, you know, this is, they've hashtagged Each for Equal. I think the one that really, really drove me insane a couple of years ago was Press for Progress.
Oh, that was a good one. Balance for Better was another one.
Balance for Better. I've been, as someone who's been writing and speaking on women's rights and particularly Indigenous women's rights for a long time, I'd be getting these requests through asking me to speak on hashtag Balance for Better or hashtag Press for Progress, and having no idea what they were talking about because I was following the UN theme, because that's a global theme that's based on a rights agenda.
Yes.
And that's, you know, the idea of celebrating International Women's Day, particularly when we've still got so many women globally who are struggling, you know, if we go from the basics, equal pay all the way through to things like FGM, forced marriage.
These issues don't come up at all often, do they, now in discussions of IWD?
They don't. And if we're talking working women's rights, even to take an Australian example, we've got a bunch of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women here who are being forced into unpaid work yet again through the Australian government's community development program. So we're at a time in history where we've just flipped over and repeated, and Aboriginal women are expected to work for free. And if we are trying to resurrect that sort of message of Working Women's Day, then looking at the amount of unpaid work and particularly the onus put on marginalised women to undertake unpaid work should be front and centre within those sorts of discussions.
I mean, something like stolen wages surely could be at the forefront of IWD activism, but it's missing generally, surely.
I mean, that's the thing. I feel as though IWD has become not the place to talk about the issues that make us uncomfortable.
Mm.
It's become the place to celebrate, and that's about it. And one of the questions that I wanted to raise for both of you relates to the nature of power relations and dismantling oppressive structures and how that intersects with IWD today. And the thing that got me really thinking about this was reflecting on a speech that Scott Morrison, our Prime Minister, gave last year at an International Women's Day event, where he said something along the lines of, we want to see women rise, but we don't want to see women rise if it means others are going to do worse. And one of the things that struck me about this, I mean, there were many things, including the almost sense of threat or coercion in that statement, don't do too well because that won't go down well. One of the things that struck me, though, was the correlation that that has with that idea that crops up a lot on International Women's Day, that gender equality will benefit everyone. Gender equality is good for men. Gender equality benefits society, culture, the economy, of course. And I just wanted to interrogate that claim a little bit more, because it does bring up questions around the nature of power, whether power is a zero-sum game or if it's more diffuse. And thinking back to Scott Morrison, part of what I always think of here is that, you know, if we think about something like federal cabinet, for more women to do well in that context, some men presumably would have to miss out. And this seems to be unacceptable in that language of gender equality benefits everyone else.
It does make me think it's linked in some ways to this corporatisation of that it's about inviting everyone in and saying, like you said, being very unthreatening, it doesn't expect anything of you, don't worry about it, and sort of that's been a false cry of inclusivity, and that we're not really then focusing on those structural power issues, that it might be nice to say everyone wins. And in some ways, you know, you could make, in a moral sense, we're all better off humans if there isn't one group oppressing another group. But in a sense, if your power is built on white supremacist capitalist patriarchy, and, you know, to use bell hooks to try to pull all of this together, well then, yeah, you will lose out if we try and dismantle white supremacist capitalist patriarchy.
Yeah, the privilege within that system will miss out. Yeah,
quite.
I mean, Michael Flood wrote a piece a couple of years ago, the Australian sociologist, warning against the idea that gender equality is universally desirable, because some people won't benefit under a system of privileges would be lost. So it would be problematic to pretend that no one has ever gained from gender inequality. And that seems to be one of the problematics about International Women's Day at the moment, and how it's cast.
And it perhaps opens up the broader question. I'd love to know your thoughts on this, Celeste, about whether or not, you know, do we focus on the wrong thing? Because can we even have liberation under capitalism at all?
Well, even talking about equality is such a conservative, you know, gain. And to take Scott Morrison's comments, what he's talking about, you know, when he's talking about women achieving, is he's talking about women achieving on those masculine, white, capitalist sort of terms. So nothing's changing, the structure's not changing, and men aren't having to give anything up for women advancing within that situation. But by default, the only women who are going to achieve and get to these lofty heights that ScoMo's prescribing just happen to be women that have the most access to those fields already. So they're women who are financially able, that are generally white, that are highly educated, you know, they come from what is most in line with the power dynamics that already exist. So nothing's being challenged. And for those women to achieve isn't going to liberate a bunch of women who don't come from those backgrounds. So I have an issue with IWD just being framed as inequality sort of discussion. And I see that play out so many times. I see these panels you were talking about earlier where it's this woman who's achieved in this corporation, or it's this woman who's written, you know. It seems to be very much about financial success, but very, very little about a broader sort of women's liberation structure and what that looks like, and how we do create spaces to allow the world to be a bit a bit more fairer.
I mean, you mentioned revolution before and liberation. I think these are words we just don't really hear associated with IWD anymore. And then, Kay, I'll bring you in here. I wanted to know as well that you mentioned before about being a feminist killjoy. And I think, yes, you know, normally that's something I would wear as a badge of honour.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't think we should be forced to make it look like feminism is fun or that living under white supremacist capitalist patriarchy is fun. But at the same time, do you think we could, is there a way of reconceptualising celebration or something? I suppose it's something I want to really put to you both. Can we think of it, you know, it's been co-opted to be this cupcakes and breakfasts and so on and so forth. But is there joy to be found maybe in solidarity and collective action? Can we do this through returning maybe to our roots and thinking of this as a solidarity for working women, for example? Is there sometimes joy to be found in taking those actions together?
I think there absolutely is. And, I mean, we only have to look at the women's marches that have occurred, particularly since the election of Trump in the States, but in countries like Spain in recent years, where we can see that there is genuine joy and celebration in solidarity, in marching together. So I certainly think that that's one way forward as well, for sure.
Celeste?
I think, I mean, there is some joy with solidarity. There's always a real pleasure that I personally get from being in an environment where we are, you know, pulling together for women's rights and we're talking about the diversity of that. I guess some of the criticism that I hear from Aboriginal women when it comes to IWD is that it does seem to be about successful white women, and that's where it begins and ends. And often our voices are thrown into programs as a voice of diversity or something, rather than these sorts of voices being crucial. If we are talking about pulling together and we are talking about creating a solidarity, you need to hear from these groups of women who struggle the most under the current sort of power dynamics. And I think that through that education and through that sort of learning how we do work and fight together to create a more equal world, there is a sense of joy. There is a sense of solidarity.
We've managed to get something positive in there. Well done. Well done, team.
I did just want to touch on, though, I mean, talking about the way in which IWD is being co-opted for capitalist purposes. I mean, Catherine Rottenberg's a scholar who's written about this quite a lot, specifically in relation to International Women's Day, but also in relation to the cultural phenomenon that she describes as neoliberal feminism.
Mm.
And I feel like IWE is almost the perfect encapsulation of that critique that she's making, that a feminism, as it comes back to the nature of what feminism is and what it's going to be. Is it going to be an inclusive feminism, a genuinely inclusive feminism that recognises marginalised, disadvantaged women in its movement? Or is it going to be one that focuses on privileged, often white women in relative positions of power? Rottenberg talks about the fact that brand activism has become a way in which feminism itself has become commodified. The T-shirts, the other paraphernalia that you come away with after an IWD event. And she obviously makes the point that this is very conservative messaging that's becoming what feminism is to many generations of new feminists. Celeste, you look like you've got something you want to add there. You're nodding your head.
My brain's going to, I won't name them, but cosmetics companies that have caught on to feminism as a way of selling products and selling that as women's empowerment, which to me is completely absurd and offensive, because these are products that have for years demonised women in order to sell these products. They've told us that we're not good enough, that we can't appear in spaces as we are. And, you know, you do see that play out. But, I mean, if I have to hear one more thing about, I don't know, girl power or feminism as choice or consumerable feminism as opposed to rights dialogues, you know, talking about struggles, talking about how we change the world, because that's what we're trying to do.
It's easy to forget in this context, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the T-shirt that you walk away with as well, isn't it? It's all those products and all that paraphernalia, and that's unfortunately what feminism seems to be becoming for many women.
I think that gets misunderstood, Kay. I don't know what you think about about that is that all this critique that we have seems to be taken to be negative. Like you say, it gets seen as like, oh, well, you'd have to be a men's rights activist to be against any of this.
Mm.
When actually it seems like smaller liberalism is as far as left as people can think. You know, you're actually talking about liberation. You are talking about a struggle, and that we need to maybe be able to bring that language back in, and how important it is that not be misunderstood.
Leaving everyone with that thought, Celeste Little is an Arendta woman, opinion writer, trade unionist, and we are thrilled to have her as our guest on this special episode of The Minefield.
Thank you so much for being with us for this special episode for IWD. Waleed Ali and Scott Stevens will be back with you next week, so you'll get more male voices on the radio again. But you can continue listening to me and Kay and Celeste by subscribing and listening to the podcast. Bye for now.
All right. Well, in the radio part of the show, we gave people a little bit of what they wanted. We talked about how there might be celebration in IWD, but what are some of the dangers that exist around that? What do we need to strive for first in order for that celebration to really actually mean something more substantive than what it currently does?
You know, Kay, I don't know. I suppose I was thinking, can we reclaim celebration and make it not mean what it currently means?
Mm.
And that maybe the feminist movement looks like a hard sell. And it's difficult work. I think probably all three of us would agree that it's quite difficult work.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I think the risk for me in posing this question of should we be celebrating or commiserating, you know, it makes it more difficult to say to someone we should definitely be commiserating, you know, get involved in a kind of world of social media and fun corporate branding. That doesn't look like the easier option. But yeah, I do worry that if you say anything about fun or about celebration, that I suppose this is the question about politics, you know, and politics as a moral issue. If you do that, then are you closing off the opportunities, as you say, to talk about the work that really needs to be done? If we allow room for any celebration, mm-hmm. are we then closing off from the work that really needs to be done and what needs to be happen, as Celeste was saying, for, you know, a better, more equal world or a world in which we're all liberated?
Look, I like cupcakes. I think we all like cupcakes.
Important point. Thanks.
Cupcakes are great. They're full of sugar. They give you the energy with which to continue the fight, which is important.
I mean, I'm going to use that. Maybe we should put that on the cupcakes. I like that.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not out of place to do so, because at the end of the day, you know, yes, there is a point where I think we have to get together and assess and possibly celebrate the gains that have been made through the collective struggle of women,
mm.
but also reassess what it is that still needs to be achieved, how women are still excluded from various parts of society purposefully by these power dynamics, and the work that we still need to do. And so a blank celebration on IWD, I'm not too sure that I would be in support of that until we've actually made a lot more gains and we have broken a lot of these barriers down. There's so many of them that still exist. There's so many women living under so many rotten circumstances due to these power dynamics. And yeah, we do need to crush them. But
the crush, I like crush. I was going to actually ask you both in that sense, if you could pick out a group of women who you think maybe are the forgotten women of IWD, women who don't top the lists of speakers or even the demands on things like marches, you know, what would you like to see brought to the fore in these discussions?
Celeste?
Well, I mentioned before the community development program, but you know, when I think of Aboriginal women, those sorts of women who are, you're looking at Aboriginal women who are oppressed by their race, yes, by their sex, yes, but also within this capitalist sort of dynamic that we're playing out, plus they're regional and rural women, plus they're not most of the time highly educated women. And every single time I see the government speaking about these women or I see the media speaking about these women, it's always about them. So you never actually hear their voices. They exist in some sort of... When the Northern Territory intervention was rolling out, for example, we heard about these, you know, apparently abused and tortured Aboriginal women, but their dialogues were very much removed from it in order to justify then oppressive government policies being placed upon them and removing their rights. So for me, the opportunity to actually hear women like that telling their stories, having people respond to them in open ways, would be absolutely paramount. As it stands at the moment, IWD, you're likely to hear from me, you're likely to hear from a couple of other Aboriginal women who have a bit of profile, but those stories don't tend to get told. We can talk about them, but we're not them. We fit within, again, those moulds.
I mean, for mine, Megan, in answer to your question, and sort of picking up on Celeste's point about the women that we don't hear from on IWD, mine would certainly be homeless women, especially in recent times around Melbourne, where we are based, and I'm sure in many other cities in Australia as well. The number of homeless people, but in particular women that I've seen on the streets, and homelessness isn't always recognised as a gendered phenomenon.
No, well, if anything, I'd say often seen as a masculinised problem, whereas we know like elderly women who are often most at risk.
And so one of the things that I must say I'm thrilled about for our own institution's efforts to mark International Women's Day was that we are having a seminar, for instance, on pregnancy and homelessness, which is something that I think is important to talk about on International Women's Day. But you obviously, Megs, had a group in mind when you posed the question.
I thought you were actually going to take what I was going to say because it was your own work that made me think of it.
Sharing feminist, Megs.
Yeah, of course. but really trafficking victims, yes. and with the shift to talk of modern slavery, again, we're seeing, I think, this being very degendered, whereas in actual fact, you know, the vast majority of trafficking victims anywhere in the world are women and girls for the purposes of sexual exploitation. And when I see some of the demands of the women's marches around Australia talking about sex workers' work, you know, that's fine, you can have your position, but where are the sex trade survivors and the trafficking survivors in this discussion of violence against women? So I think we do need to be having a bit more of a balanced conversation around that. And, you know, I think none of the things we're talking about fit within that model of celebrating women's achievements. And that's why it does, like you say, become very difficult to talk about if you allow this kind of celebratory narrative, that then where do you get these really important points into the discussion? And, you know, it's a bit like we're hearing sometimes, I think, around, you know, discussion of bushfire and climate change. Oh, no, not in the middle of a disaster. You shouldn't be talking about these political issues, in inverted commas. And that sometimes we get that with IWD. Like, no, this is a nice day to pat women on the back and you not ruin it with your talk of homeless women and Aboriginal women who don't get a chance to speak and trafficking victims. You know, it's sort of, I think that points out the exact problem that we've been sort of trying to grapple with in a way, in what way does public celebration, in particular the performative nature of celebration, shut off these more important political discussions and moral issues.
Can I do something as trite?
No.
As to engage the trope of being my own and maybe yours as well, devil's advocate, and pose this, I suppose, moral conundrum to you that I've been thinking about as we were preparing for today's show. The typical IWD event we've noted is that, you know, businessy, corporate type event where you have one woman or a panel of women speakers who've done very, very well at their given profession most often. And one of the things that has been circling around in my head is the question of female solidarity and mentorship in workplaces. Because what I find is that as a fairly early career academic, and I'm sure a lot of other women would experience this in their workplaces as well, as I try to find my feet in what I'm doing, I often engage my female colleagues in conversations about how on earth they manage to, in my case, have a family, work full time, how they've achieved success in their careers. And I don't think that on a day-to-day basis there's anything morally reprehensible about that, or morally problematic potentially even. But when I go to an IWD event, my feminist antennae just pricks right up and I'm instantly uncomfortable. And one of the questions I was thinking about was, how is my experience of engagement with my colleagues, my more senior colleagues, who I'm trying to learn off and understand how they overcame the barriers that they did in order to get where they are. How is that qualitatively different or morally different to what happens at those events that we've been talking about on International Women's Day. And I have some ideas on how...
I thought you might.
Yeah, just a couple. Just a couple of ideas on how that might be different. But I wondered what your thoughts were, because...
Do you think it could be an issue of individual versus collective action? I don't know if that's how you might see it, Celeste, but like, I don't think any serious feminist praxis is into blaming individual women for their actions and you know, trying to look at what other women have managed to do to navigate their own systems of oppression, whether that be in a workplace or somewhere else. It's very understandable, but that doesn't get us very far. So I don't know if that's why, you know, again, it becomes, like you say, the reification of an individual, like, oh, well done you, and we can all follow your path to success, isn't maybe going to be useful for IWD. I don't know what you think on that, Celeste.
I guess I can only just, you know, reinforce that, to be honest. It's sort of, when there are focuses on individual achievements and individual advancement, and there's celebration of that, but it's within, I mean... Let's be honest, universities, again, highly elitist, masculinized, you know, you've got a feminized workforce, but it's a masculinized power structure.
Yep.
Everywhere you look, there's buildings that are named after all these white blokes who achieved stuff. And so individual women achieving within that and the celebration of them, on one hand, I totally support, because they've had to navigate that structure. But on the other hand, it doesn't necessarily serve other women who are trying to navigate that exact same structure. It kind of reinforces the message that in order to advance here, you have to tick all these boxes of a Western male wealthy power dynamic.
Well, sort of the Margaret Thatcher model of power in a way, isn't it? Like, you say, when you say, oh, well, women are really disadvantaged in politics, oh, what about Margaret Thatcher? And you think, well, that her success does not mean the success of all women.
Well, like, it's funny, you know, Megan, that you mentioned Thatcher, because when I was trying to articulate what I saw as the difference between those two scenarios that I was sort of painting for you as a picture, was... It's almost as if by putting these highly successful women up on a stage and saying, do what they did, we're almost expecting that trickle-down effect that capitalism tells us will happen, where, you know, if those with privilege and power, it's better for them to have it, because then it'll trickle down to the rest of us and the rest of us will lead a wonderful life. And I've always wondered, why do we expect patriarchy it's the same false promise.
Turn around and be nice. Yeah,
well,
it's
exactly.
Not, well, can I, on a related point, I was wondering if we're not saying the language is wrong, but on a bigger level, even the rights discourse, I'm wondering how problematic that is. You know, I think about the work of Catherine MacKinnon, and that so much of it is framed around expecting the state to give us rights. Well, I mean, to be demanded and to be taken from the state, surely we all need collective action to do that.
Yes.
But then the state itself can be seen as the epitome of white supremacist capitalist patriarchy.
Yes.
So are we not doing enough, like you think, system crushing, you know, to pick up on Celeste's point, you know, have we stopped really thinking about system change and we're just saying, please recognise us as equal status to white heterosexual men?
Oh, let's be honest. I mean, I'm always two steps away from anarchy anyway. But maybe there does need to be a bit more work revisiting what sort of power dynamic, power structures, what sort of forms of governance we would want in a more equal world. And is it a state that has rules and legislation and that, or is it collective negotiation? Is it the more sort of decentralized models of
deliberative, you know, democracy?
Yeah, there's so many options out there, but I think that we're so framed within our own lived experience and context and that maybe things do come back to what we know. And there's almost a bit of a safety in framing these sorts of celebrations in that way, as individuals achieving within that, as opposed to as a collective of people looking at how we can do things differently, how we can push towards those.
I mean, and it hasn't worked realistically, has it? Like, up to this point, when I think I was looking back at some of the you know, sheets of demands that lesbian activists and lesbian feminist activists used to put up in sort of the 60s and 70s. And I remember a group of women saying, yeah, we ran a feminist summer school recently and we were asking women to look at redrawing those. And they're like, well, we haven't achieved any of them. Reproductive and sexual autonomy, genuinely equal pay, you know, all these things are still, we're talking about in the distant future. So maybe we do need a more radical rethinking. Maybe this International Women's Day will be the great rising up and the smashing of all of the systems after we eat the cupcakes.
Mm. That seems like a very happy thought to finish on, a rising with cupcakes. What do you think, Megan? Do you reckon they're going to have us back?
Oh, I don't know. That could be an idea.
Women's voices on the radio. Very controversial.
Start the revolution.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.